With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
And again, like, now that I say this, a lot of people didn't believe me when I said it then. A lot of people don't believe half the stuff I say, frankly, even when I'm streaming. But, like, the only goal that I had was to not make a fool of myself and lose rating points.
All right, here we go. Another episode of the C-Squared podcast. We have an exciting one. We're here after the American Cup just finished. Just a couple of hours ago, we have the two winners with us, Grandmaster Hikaru Nakamura and Grandmaster Irina Krush. Guys, welcome to the show. Welcome back to you, Hikaru. You've been on the podcast previously. Let's start with the tournament.
Sure. So,
talk about it.
Yeah, as far as my event went, it was very difficult. I mean, it felt smooth for the first couple of rounds. I won in classical chess against both Sam Sevin and Lenier Dominguez. Then against Wesley, I mean, I had this very tough first match. The second match was very tough, which I lost. And I won today another very, very difficult match where it seemed like whoever made the last blunder would lose. So I'm very happy that I won, but it certainly wasn't easy.
Yeah, Irina, your trajectory seemed quite smooth. It felt, but you did meet this incredible opponent, Alice Lee, on the way.
Yeah, so tell us about that. 2 years in a row that we have kind of a similar scenario where I'm facing Alice in the finals of the champions bracket, and then I face her again after she gets back from the elimination bracket. You know, in a way, it's not a surprising scenario, right? Like, it's definitely something that is plausible that can play out, although, of course, it can also be very different, right? Because you're not guaranteed to get there. So, last time I was able to win all my games in the classical without having to play any shorter time controls, and this year was definitely more challenging. I mean, actually, the critical moment for me was the finals of the champions bracket, for sure. Like, that was, like, just a very difficult day, you know, where I was trying to win with the black pieces. I really thought I had a good chance to just kind of seal the match there, and when I didn't, and I almost nearly lost, even, and then I had to come back again, and that was worse with black, and I was, like, on the verge of losing, and then I pulled that one out and win, and then I have to go on to kind of win again as white. I mean, it was just like kind of it's a day that you're going to remember for a long time.
Yeah. And it almost felt like you guys at some point were expected, or at least it felt that way, the energy felt that way, that you guys were expected to finish the championship, get the title, and then you didn't. And then you had to go back to the drawing board and, you know, regroup and things of that nature. Like, tell us about that.
I guess I'll start. I think for me, a lot of people have wondered, like, what happened. Actually, I'll go back in time. A lot of people have wondered what happened when I played this game against Dingler in the final round of the candidates. And I had this feeling when I was playing that game, sort of like, I just wanting the event to be over. To be over. Like, it wasn't even about the result, like winning, drawing, or losing, but wanting it to be over. And I felt like yesterday I had that same feeling when I played Wesley. Mm-hmm. It was like, I'm just expecting it to be over. Like, of course, the only way it's over is if I win. But I'm sort of expecting that. And then there were some critical moments in that first tiebreaker game where it didn't work out for me. And then when I lost that, obviously the second game wasn't even close, and so I had this feeling, and then sort of to regroup, I mean, I actually didn't do anything with chess last night. I didn't do a recap. I basically just went out, I played pool, I had some beers, and just forgot about everything. And so for me, it was just resetting, because coming into the event, and again, like, now that I say this, a lot of people didn't believe me when I said it then. A lot of people don't believe half the stuff I say, frankly, even when I'm streaming. But like the only goal that I had was to not make a fool of myself and lose rating points in classical. That's the only goal I had. So when I put it in perspective last night, where not only did I not lose points, but I gained points in classical, that already was a victory. So I just sort of forgot about everything else and the way I'd gotten there, and just reset. And I found a way, but still, even today, I mean, there were moments when I probably could have lost.
I was curious about this moment earlier in your tournament, because you had drawn the first game against Lenier. This was the second match, right?
Yes.
And then you're playing with the black pieces. And we see often in these matches that a quick draw happens, goes to a tiebreak, where you would, generally speaking, be the favorite against Lenier. But instead you played a very risky opening the Kalashnikov. It felt almost like you kind of planned to win that game with the black pieces rather than going for a tiebreak. And then you just like crushed him with black.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't the plan, but I prepared the opening before the event, and I thought it was a reasonable try. So I think when you look at top-level chess, and maybe in particular when you're looking at an event with players who have played each other so many times and are all so familiar with everyone's style, I just thought it was a great surprise. And so it wasn't the plan. And also, I would say that I was actually very upset when I didn't win the first game, because I had this very, very good position. I think most of the time, I would say probably 80% of the time, I think I win that position around when I played Bishop H3 in this middle game. But it wasn't the plan, but I had this prepped anyway for Sevian, so I thought, why not use it? And it worked out very beautifully. But again, for every time that it works out, there probably are going to be like five times that it doesn't work out. So you just have to pick the right moment. And it was surprising, but yeah, that's how it goes.
And you were also the only player to win a classical game for, was it the entirety of the event? Did anyone else win a classical game in the event?
No. It was... Yeah. Two games in the open section, and then in the women's section, there were quite a few, I think.
Quite a few
decisive games. Did you have any of these type of openings prepared, this type of like sharp openings prepared without
I think that's my,
much,
all my openings were kind of like, you know, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've played the Sicilian a few times, Sicilian Khan. And yeah, actually, I did a lot of kind of experimentation in the openings. Like, I just jumped around from one to another, and it's kind of just kind of hard to catch. And I think that. That was a pretty successful strategy.
I feel like this was pretty much the case for everybody. And I don't know, maybe you can jump in on this one as well, Fabi. Did you have any sort of like sharp ones due to the fact that the time control is so short and you don't have a second time control? Did that go into the match strategy, the tournament strategy?
Well, I didn't really think up a strategy. And then during the second game against Wesley, and I had a chance to take on E6. And I was just kind of worried about it because, like, my time was getting low. So the time control was probably affecting me a bit negatively in terms of my thoughts when I should have just gone for it.
Yeah.
But I was a bit curious because you tend to play the Sicilian in very sharp openings. But sometimes in these match situations, you win the first game and then the, like, desire is to rock up a bit.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like changing your repertoire in those, like, must-draw games?
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be a good idea, right? It depends on what you have available. You know, like, to be honest, it's just, like, I know the Sicilian so much better than I know anything else that, like, I tend to have to, like, find, you know, what Sicilian line I'm going to go for, right? Like, yeah, if I knew the Petrov as well as I know the Sicilian, I think I would go for that. Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of the Petrov, Wesley played the Petrov as well, a couple of games. That was completely unexpected, yeah? Is this the first time he plays the Petrov?
It's always a surprise for me when, like, Berlin players change, because if you're a Berlin player, it feels like, why would you ever change? It's just such a solid opening, especially in these matches. But it seems like people also want to experiment a bit. I was also surprised when Wesley switched to Petrov and when he switched to Kalashnikov. It's, like, from a white point of view, it's a real pain.
What's
pain
his
to...
name? Sam came up with some ideas, yeah, in the... Berlin in his match against Ray. It felt like he got like
he was going for the end game. I was impressed that he was going for very, very direct lines and finding some chances.
Yeah.
So if you're going for the most solid line as black to make a draw against E4, what would be your choice, Bobby?
Like, assuming I know it perfectly, which I don't, then it would be the Berlin. I feel like that's where the opponent has the least amount of leeway to create winning chances or like opening chances.
Yeah.
But I think like Hikaru would be a much better person to speak on this.
No, I mean I would say if you can know it perfectly, the Petrov is the best. But that's only if you know it perfectly,
okay.
Because there are more chances to confuse the issue and make it very complicated in the Petrov than the Berlin.
Okay.
So it's a smaller window.
So
but if you know it perfectly, I think the Petrov is objectively the best.
Well, you avoid the entire Italian, which is like a lot of people's refuge for finding some...
Oh, what about against D4?
Well,
I'm sorry. Give me some opening advice here, Bobby.
No, I think a lot of people have like switched to the Queen's Gambit Accepted because it's so direct. You avoid the Ninzo, you avoid the Catalan. And like when I was working with Rustam, he was like, we're going to kill D4 with the Queen's Gambit Accepted. And then everyone made fun of me for playing the Queen's Gambit Accepted. But then it like recently it gained so much popularity. Like Wesley, Wesley was playing at Lebon. Yeah, even Maxime, which was like a shock to me. How could Maxime not play the Grunfeld and Nidorf?
Hikari, you haven't played in like 9 months. I mean, obviously, whenever you go into a tournament, you have certain emotions. But when you haven't felt those type of emotions for like 9 months, like what was going through your head?
Well, I mean, I didn't feel those emotions until it actually mattered, which was basically the last 3 days. Mm. You know, I think the main thing is when you haven't played for a long time, when you can get positions that are very stable and very like positional and quiet, it's better than having like these really confrontational games. Like if I had this game against Linear in the first round, I don't know if I would have won that game. Yeah. I hadn't played so much, and having a few games under my belt, it was a lot easier. Mm. So I think for me, the emotions definitely didn't play a role until I suddenly realized that I was on the verge of winning the tournament. But I would also say that like separate of nerves or any of that stuff, I think that when you're playing against a player like Wesley, without that practice, there's certain mistakes that I was making, specifically like the last 3 days, every game I was up on time. It was up maybe 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And my reactions to what in those situations were not the best. And I think that's specifically because I was out of practice, but it seemed to still be good enough.
One of those games is probably the first Berlin that you lost in the 10+5. When it felt like you got a great position, that night coming to F4, H5, H4, and it felt like you were getting there first. And then you stopped finding the way through, and then he was just pushing his pawns and caught you up on time, things of that nature, and then pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just sort of the situation. It became too much, and I thought I was better. I was expecting to win. I couldn't find a breakthrough, and there were a couple of moments where I could have made some repetitions and made some draws, and I didn't do that, and I let the pressure get to me. That's the simplest way of putting it, and it was very unfortunate, of course, but Wesley's a great player, and sometimes you can't always win.
That's true. What was your most difficult moment in the cup?
Well, I think that game in the Champions bracket, probably the one with Black, you know, this rook end game that I nearly lost. I think that was pretty difficult. I mean, I was so difficult that at some point I made a move, like I gave up my rook. Like a move earlier than I had to.
Yeah.
Like literally just an unexplainable move. And the computer is still saying zeros. Well, that's nice for me, but the move makes no sense. Like, why did I play? You can't even explain. I could have done it with a move later and I definitely wouldn't be losing. So I was kind of lucky. You know, I was lucky to be looking at my position and realizing, no, I'm still okay. But yeah, I mean, you can feel that something is like wrong in your head if you're playing moves like that.
Yeah.
Did you see a clear win for her in that endgame?
No. Okay. And when I looked at it with the computer, I mean, honestly, the computer is like +7 or +8 is based on like some one move. And if she doesn't make that move, she can actually lose, which like, so it was not really like that obviously winning for her at all. And especially in this time situation. Yeah, that was fortunate.
Yeah, it looked rather scary. Two pawns barreling down.
Yeah, was also, like there was some move rook A5 that you had to see.
It's always move by move.
Yeah.
One thing about, because she never beat you before that game. And you guys have played like so many times against each other, also in Rapid and Blitz, Classical as well. And then whenever you have this type of situations with a specific player and then they beat you once, there's some doubts creeping in. Like, what if he continues or she continues beating me and things of that nature? Was anything like that going through your mind?
You know, not really, because just the nature of the game, you know, I felt like I did so much to lose myself, you know, that it was like, I mean, I had the most comfortable position you could ever dream of, no danger on the horizon. And I definitely felt like, you know, the reason that I lost was so much of my bad decisions, you know, that in a way, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, how could this happen? You had so many opportunities not to do this. You just like literally committed a suicide. So, I mean, no, I didn't feel overall like now I'm going to start like losing, you know, now that I've started this streak. I felt, I just felt like I needed to play better.
Because you have the same whenever you beat somebody for the first time and then you're like, I can do this all the time, right?
Yeah.
And I would assume the reverse is also possible. Cool.
Hikaru, I was just one last question. I'm curious because you've played so many matches against Wesley, especially recently. You played this very, very long and tight match in the Global Championship last year. And you both seem to be rather evenly matched in general. Do you feel like there's certain time controls that favor him more so and certain time controls that favor you more so?
Yeah, so it's weird. I mean, I think certainly online, I've never felt that Wesley is any slower than I am. But over the board, at least over the last couple of days, I think in the Blitz, I'm just a huge favorite against him. Just also because of, like, in the 10 minutes and the 25 minutes, I was always up on time. Now, mind you, I am moving a lot quicker than I ever used to. So that does play some role. But I think in the Blitz, I'm a big favorite. I would say in 25, I think Wesley is maybe a slight favorite. I think in 10, it just depends on the position. And Blitz, I'm definitely the favorite. So that's how I would break it down.
And how would you, like, assess your own Blitz play? Because I guess, like, stylistically you've changed over, let's say, the last 10 years compared to 10 years ago when you were also one of the best in the world at Blitz. Do you feel like certain aspects of your game have improved and certain aspects have perhaps gotten a bit weaker?
Yeah, so it's very hard to judge, because I think I feel like Rapid is like this very unhappy place for me, where when I play Classical, I can still move very fast, and then when I need to slow it down, I can take the time in the critical moments. And Rapid, I felt like it's like I'm moving too quickly, and then I don't know what I'm doing. I start using too much time. So I think that generally it's very, very hard to judge, but I would say these days I like quiet positions more than tactical positions, certainly, and... I've obviously been very good at Blitz for a long time, but I think when I go up against Wesley specifically, the biggest issue, I think for both of us, is that we play pretty much the same openings with white and black to a T. It's not just, I mean, there's maybe like one or two openings. He plays the Italian. I don't really play the Italian much. I play the English. He doesn't really play the English, but that's about it. Everything else is identical. Play the same opening, same variations, same sidelines, and... So I think, you know, like when we face each other specifically, it's, for me, I feel like I'm just trying to get it down to Blitz or get it to less and less time. And then I think I can find my way through when all is said and done. But obviously, I think for the fans, it was a great match. And I think it was a great conclusion to the event as a whole.
Were you worried at all about the 10+5 time format? Because it felt like Wesley was putting a lot of pressure in pretty much every single game. White, black, like he was managing somehow to outplay you in the middle game.
Well, I mean, I felt like Wesley in the 25 minute, the Berlin game, I mean, he did outplay me in that late middle game into the end game with the Bishops, but he had 25 minutes. I think we had played that game with 10 minutes on the clock.
The last one.
Yeah, today, the one where the two Bishops.
I think you were very close to it.
But I was also very close to losing it at critical moments as well. But I mean, for example, in the 10+5, I think today the first game, which I was close to losing at one moment, was more my own doing than his.
Yeah.
Like I mean, when I did like my recap earlier, I spoke about how I thought Wesley was a better player today. And the reason I say that is because when I play this whole line with knight h7, knight g5, and the Italian d5, I thought I was better. And so my decisions, which led to me getting a worse position, were specifically because I refused to take a draw. And so it was more self-inflicted than I felt like Wesley outplayed me in that game. But it obviously was a tough decision, too, because in the 10+5, since I had white in the second game after drawing the first one, I had the option to try and make a quick draw.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure whether I should do that, get forced to blitz where I think I'm a big favorite, or just go for it. But, you know, when all was said and done, I decided to go for it simply because I thought, why waste a white?
Yeah.
Why waste my white game if I have that chance?
Guys, go ahead, Fabi.
I was just curious just about the last moment in the last game, which where you won the tournament. What do you think caused him? Was it just tiredness, or what caused him to take that pawn on d2?
Yeah, I think Wesley was just tired at that point. I think he also overestimated my position. I think he thought it was getting pretty scared with the knight on e5, maybe the bishop on c4, the rook's on the f-file. I think he basically saw some ghosts. And you know, I have to say, like, today, whether it's confidence-related or not, like, I felt that Wesley was better, and I was sort of just like, play one good game, or, you know, if there's one mistake that he makes, that's all that it takes to win the match. And I was just somewhat fortunate. But, you know, when all is said and done, I think overall, I probably played the best out of anyone, so I guess it's deserved.
Guys, thank you very much for taking the time. I mean, this is after dinner, after the championship, so there wasn't a lot of rest. Thanks for taking the time.
No problem.
Thank you.
All right, here we are. We're back. We have Mr. Yasser, as well as international arbiter Judith Starai, who... conducted the event alongside Chris Bird. Judith, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You've been on the show before, so
I'm
still going to welcome you.
I'm shocked that you've invited me back.
I mean, well, me too.
Yeah,
I was trying to convince
that's
him.
That's like, what happened? Best shows.
Oh, I know what it is.
What is it?
I offered my apartment as a place to do the podcast, and you felt obliged.
There you go.
It's not nice to ignore those.
I'm returning the favor, but
thank you.
You guys were a bit loud in the back.
Yes.
I mean, you guys are having a lot of fun. What's happening here?
Well, I've got a full house, in truth. The American Cup open section and ladies section has been completed, and all that stress that has been built up over the last 2 weeks, it's being dissipated as we speak. Everybody's telling stories, and it's nice to just chill.
Judith, how was, from your perspective, how was the American Cup from an arbiter's perspective? This was a different format, a different playing venue. I know there was one bathroom for like 16 players. That might have been a problem at some point. What problems did you guys have?
Not too many problems. The format is great. I love it. As Irina said before one of her interviews, that she likes this format. I fully agree. It's also similar to what we do in chess.com. Mm-hmm. So I really like it. Bathroom, yeah, it was an issue, but I think whenever it was occupied, we actually escorted players down to the second floor, so we had backup options. And
did you have any bathroom problems?
No, I would just wait. I didn't know that was an option.
Hold it back. Chris.
Zen.
Zen. And it would disappear.
Yeah. But that problem also seems to solve itself as people get eliminated.
Exactly.
Yeah. The number of people at the bathroom.
You guys had, we saw it on the camera. I think Irina at some point, when she almost flagged against Alice Lee, and then she was saying something, I believe, to you or to Chris. I'm not.
No, it
sure
was a general disalignment of the voice.
The light. Okay.
No, there were some discussion on the other side of the room, and she didn't like that she's being disturbed under time pressure. So I fully agree with her. There was Chris acted fast and resolved the problem, and that's it.
Yeah, and I feel this was one of the problems, right? Because you guys had to balance the end time of one portion, one format, with the start time of a different format. So I would assume this was a bit of an issue.
Yeah, but I mean, it got resolved fast, and it turned out well for her, right?
That's good. Yeah.
What is the biggest dispute you've had to resolve during a chess game or a chess tournament?
This chess tournament. There was really not a issue. The one time was that between Wesley and Hikaru, there was a threefold claim, and I actually didn't know the rule perfectly, how that I have to make, Hikaru paused the clock, claimed the threefold, and told me what the move is, and I thought that, okay, he can make the move, and Chris later told me that, nope, I have to make the move, because if the player touches the piece, that's still, even though under pause clock and under claim, but then it happened again, and then I did it correctly.
How about generally, not just in this event, but in general in your practice as an arbiter, have you resolved over any big disputes?
Well, there are always big disputes, and every dispute is the biggest dispute in a player's eyes, right? I guess if you do blitz and rapid, it's always harder, right? Because the player's not notating, and you have to be more attentive, and also, especially if you are not the only arbiter on one board, then it's always, you have to pay attention, right? So there was one blitz tournament where players were down in seconds, and one player knocked over a piece so much that it actually landed on the floor, right? And he pushed the clock, right? And the other time started, and then he picked up under opponent's time, and that's not correct. So I think recently in the past year, that was the biggest dispute, because it was back and forth. And how I...
Did you guys have any problems in your careers? More recently, Fabi, did you have any problems?
I had one, albeit I'll try to get through the story quickly, because the whole saga took hours.
Oh my.
I was playing Sergei Karjakin in one of the FIDE Grand Prix events in Hantimansis 2015. And at some point, it was a threefold repetition. And I didn't realize it, that I had just gone to a threefold repetition. I was on the better side. Sergei realized it, and he went to the arbiter, made the claim. Arbiter checks the score sheets, says, oh yeah, it's a threefold repetition. Okay. I go back, I shake Sergei's hand. Then I check my score sheet. I'm like, wait, this is not a threefold repetition. I check it, it's only been two times. I go back to the arbiter, I'm like, it's two times.
Mm-hmm.
And the correct, I think that the correct decision from his point of view should have been, okay, you shook hands, and it's over, right?
Yes.
You've accepted
that's
the
what
result.
I think. That's,
yes.
Yeah. But the arbiter said, okay,
you have
continue,
to play on?
Continue.
Wow.
To me, that seemed like a strange decision at the time, but I was just
young, and you accepted the arbiter's
experience.
Well,
you were happy because you were up,
well,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I would have accepted either way, but if he said you continue the game, we continue the game. Mm-hmm. And eventually I'm winning, but I mess up and we draw. And if I had won, I think it would have been a huge dispute because Sergey would have undoubtedly written an appeal.
Yes, yes.
Because it was probably an incorrect decision from a rules point of view. Mm-hmm. And then, but I already won the game, so, but we also agreed to draw, so it would have been a complete mess. Since we drew, there was no dispute,
yeah,
really, and the result stood. And Sergey complained to the press, but not like an official complaint.
Right.
That was the biggest that I can think of.
The rule in my time was very simple. If you signed the score sheet and your opponent signed the score sheet, that was it.
It's over,
it was,
right?
Yeah. But if you didn't sign the score sheet, you said, I'm not happy with the outcome of this game, and I reserve my right to open up a discussion. You didn't sign the score sheet, but when you signed the score sheet, that was
In this case, I think we did.
You had signed the score sheet.
Before signing the score, if you shook hands, then that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Also,
that has to be binding.
Well,
right?
my favorite actually was at a U.S. championship. So I always served on these appeals committees, which was great, except I never had an appeal to decide.
Right, right.
So it was a game between Nick DeFermian and John Fedora. Nick DeFermian and Michael Rode, pardon me. John Fedora was on the appeals committee, and we were watching this game of the U.S. championship. So no question that Nick is winning. But his flag, it's an analog clock, is like as rigid as could be. So Michael King gets run across the board. He goes and he goes to press the clock, and he accidentally, it wasn't deliberate, he knocked over his own king. And his king is prostrate on the board. Flag, you lose. And if he hadn't knocked over his king, he would have won on time. But the piece was over. So the arbiters got together. They got together and say, okay, we're going to give some extra time. They didn't say how much. The game continued. Like five moves later, top, top, the king's running across the board. He knocks over his king. The flag falls. Now, at this point, you know, the whole room is full of, like, what's going to happen now? Now the arbiters decide to give a minute to Nick, which is a lot, and that would end the game. And John turns to me and says, thank God. If they had only given him a few seconds and the flag had fallen, it would be three-time repetition. I won the game three times on the clock. I'm claiming a draw. Like, what? It was, like, terrible.
Speaking of three-time repetition, I do want to ask you, how can you game the system? So, for example, you have like a really bad position. You know that you have a pretty bad position, and then you're going down to your last few seconds. Let's say it's a second time repetition, and you know that it's a second time repetition, but you stop the clock, and you're saying, let's check for threefold repetition.
Right.
In the meantime, while the arbiter goes and checks, you get, back in the days when you didn't have the computers and everything, you would get like 20 minutes. Now you would get maybe like five more minutes.
Yeah.
You can game the system like that and give yourself some time to think.
Yeah,
is there a way to deal with that?
Well, there's not really, right? You have to check it, and if the claim is not correct, not threefold, the opponent gets
some
one
time
or 2 minutes, or depending on time control of the original game. That's
I remember it was an instance in the Olympiad between Russia and China in the women's section, 2018 or 2016. And she claimed threefold, super difficult position.
Yeah.
While they were checking it for like 10, 15 minutes, she was like this, you know, trying to figure out the position. Like
there's,
she knew the
claim really
was
really bad. There's really nothing we can do.
Can't the arbiters tell the players you need to step away from the board?
I think that's a reasonable, but I don't know. Honestly, I have to look it up. But
it's a loophole,
It is a loophole, so that would be nice to close it. Yeah, it is. I mean, there's nothing really we can do, right? The player claims a threefold. We have to check it, and that's it. There's no, like, they can do it over and over again. It's not like a legal move, and you lose it the second time and everything.
One of the most famous,
like, a fair play, It should be a fair play violation.
Yeah, so kind of if you see that it's a fair play violation, then you can warn the player to stop doing that, right? If it's repetitive really fast. Like today was a good threefold No, it was in the Blitz tournament, the side event, right? Oh. So we were playing under Blitz conditions, right? No, and two arbiters over 29 or 13 boards or whatever, how many boards there were there. And Wasif, and I don't know who was the opponent.
Raja Harshit.
Yes, and Raja...
yes. What happened?
Yeah, Raja paused the clock and claimed 3-4. They said, you didn't call me, because if under these conditions, you have to call the arbiter so that I can observe, and then I can award the 3-4 if I see it. But if I don't see it, and your opponent doesn't agree, then that's it. Then I can't. So Wasif got a minute, and then he found the win. And
because they weren't playing on televised or DGT boards,
right?
Yeah,
no, they weren't. Right.
Yeah, if they were on a DGT board, it would be possible.
Yeah. And I was right there, so all he had to do is say, arbiter, pause the clock, say, arbiter, I want you to focus on this game. Unpause the clock, make the...
Yeah.
Threefold, right? And then I could have lost.
That's an interesting one. Yeah. So first you have to ask the arbiter to come watch your game.
Yeah.
And then, and that's why they have arbiters for each board at the big events. At the Olympias. They have one arbiter on each board watching every like.
Yeah, but for example, here in the American Cup, right, under Rapid and Blitz, if you guys needed to do that, and there were many matches still going on, and
but here
and I
is, there's DGT.
DGT board. DGT.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Never mind. It's too late.
Without the DGTs, that's a completely different story.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
One of my great stories about rules. So a lot of people wrongly believe that the rules have been written in stone for 500 years.
Oh,
we
made
the last rules changes and they've never changed. They change all the time. And at one time there used to be a rule that you, the player, had to call the flag of the opponent. There could be no outside interference. Today, the arbiter calls the flag, but there was a time that the players were responsible. There's this famous story of Sammy Reshevsky. He was playing the U.S. Open with hundreds of people watching, and he was in time trouble, and his opponent was thinking. There was a big time scramble, and from the front row, Mrs. Reshevsky jumped out of her seat and started shouting, "Flag! Flag! Flag!" And Sammy said, "I win." Stop the clock.
He has the best story.
And
right?
It was a little like everybody's in a shock, and the opponent, you know, protested that there was outside interference.
Yeah, exactly.
And the arbiter said, "We got to continue." And Sammy said, "No. I went on time. There was no outside interference." I'm sorry, Sammy, but there was 500 witnesses that heard your wife shout, "Flag, flag!" Yeah. No outside interference. According to Talmudic law, my wife and I are one flesh. Sammy was awarded the win. We are one flesh. My wife and I are one flesh. Just keep that in mind.
You have the future, best stories ever.
For your future matches.
I'm trying to remember. There was, because I once got this book of... Paul Benko's autobiography, really great book.
Yeah,
really
from Jeremy Silman,
Yeah. It first included his life story and then all his studies, games, and annotations.
Amazing.
And he had a story with Reshevsky, because if I recall correctly, they were not friends at all.
Nobody was friends with Sammy. Sammy was not in polite company.
And he had a similar story about, and they were also both time trouble addicts, right?
Truly.
And I can't remember the story, but they had a story which involved time trouble and which involved an arbiter dispute. But I think in this case, the arbiter was a friend of Reshevsky.
Right.
And so the dispute was that Paul Benko was saying, well, they're colluding together.
It's a bias.
But I don't remember the details. I was actually hoping that he might
those details. But one of my favorite stories on that was Mark Deason. Mark Deason and Sammy Reshevsky were playing in Lone Pine, California. These were great open Swiss events that were, you know, very nice events. And Sammy said, "Are you playing for a win?" Which we have always interpreted as offer of a draw. So Mark started thinking and got down on the clock and stopped the clock and said, "I accept the draw." Sammy said, "I didn't offer you a draw." And when there were other people who were witnesses, and Sammy said to Kashdan, Isaac Kashdan, "They're lying! Sammy, they're lying." So Isaac Kashdan said, "You gotta play. You gotta continue play."
Yeah.
So there was Mark, you know, really having to play on time, you know, like move directly. And then Sammy got into time trouble. And they had some very strange time control. Think 50 moves in 2.5 hours. It wasn't the 40 in 2 or something like that. So they started banging the clock and they went up to move 60. Okay? So they're banging the clock and I was watching the whole thing and there was a white pawn on A4. And bang, 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 bang. And somehow this pawn just kind of got shaken off the table. I mean, it just disappeared. It just kind of vibrated away all by itself, right? And the final move was, of course, Sammy is black playing queen b5, slapping the clock and the flag.
Yeah, flag.
Flag. You guys made the time control. Now you got to reconstitute the game. So there's the table over there, but now they started, you know, with the score sheet e45, etc. And as they're getting closer and closer to the position,
there was
there's
a
no A4 pawn on that board, but on this board, the A4 pawn is still there.
It hasn't moved yet.
Right?
It hasn't moved yet.
And it's sort of like, you have to seal your move. And Mark Deason was like, and he wrote it as clearly as he possibly could.
There is a pawn. There is definitely a pawn.
But you have to have seen those games where the pawns do kind of move off the board. They don't stay on the square that they were stuck
those
to.
Those things don't happen anymore. Yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, so there was recently a tournament. I don't know if you were following this. The Armageddon Championship
in Berlin,
yeah. Right?
Yeah. Oh,
and it ended with Armageddon games, no increment.
Right.
Lanier played a game against Andrew Tang.
Yeah.
He also played a game against Ray Robson, but it wasn't as dramatic, but it also ended in a similar way. But against Andrew Tang, they're getting down to seconds. It's a rook end game, and then at some point, all the pieces are like
bang, 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 bang.
Like they're just.
Not even
on the squares. They just all leave the board at the same time. There's no more pieces on the board. The pieces are rolling around. You don't know where anything is.
Right.
I think Lanier gets flagged. And
that's it.
That's the game.
That's the Armageddon.
There was no chess. Like, it was similar to this World Cup game between Olya Badelka.
I remember that.
Who was the second player?
It's funny because I was coaching Badelka for she was still on my team, so we were discussing in between games. I'm trying to remember the name. I'm having a lapse.
Maybe it'll come to us. But
everybody knows about that game.
Yeah, it was another Armageddon game, and all the pieces are just on. They're not upright. They're just rolling around on the board, and Badelka wins, I think, in the end. But the last few moves were not chess moves. And there
they were just bang, bang, and the clock.
A lot of like public sentiment was, this is not chess, this is
right.
Some,
yeah.
The problem is when one player starts doing those type of loopy moves, the other one responds
the same way.
Like, you start to do it, I'm going to do it as well, and then it turns into a complete mess.
And
that's the problem.
Slap fest on the clock.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you can call an arbiter at any moment that an illegal move is played, right?
Absolutely.
That a move is not executed from
absolutely.
One player.
Pass the clock, come get the arbiter. Yeah.
So it would seem that players would know this by now, that you call the arbiter
they get caught up in the moment. Yeah. Is what happens, right?
I think the heat of the moment, you don't want to be the one stopping the clock, right? I don't know. There's something.
But
you
want to
continue the game, you want
to
make the
moves. Your
moves.
Opponents think about the position, right? While you still call the arbiter and
everything.
I think a lot of players doesn't want to stop the clock because if they feel that... Okay,
they don't know how the position, the assessment of the position is. They don't want to stop. Yeah,
but
it's
but
a decision. It's a decision that you either make.
If someone has in an Armageddon game, let's say it's 5 seconds each, they're both about to run out of time.
Can do a lot.
And they make a move, the piece rolls off the board, and they press the clock. That's an illegal move, right?
That correct.
Wouldn't the opponent get extra time for that? Which
1 minute,
would be game decided, right?
Yeah, 1 minute. And that's how
Rossi
won today.
Right.
Yeah.
It would really clear up these whole scrambles. Nobody would be carelessly
I mean,
Rossi
won today because he got a minute, and he found them
exactly, under
1 minute.
Did he?
Yeah, he won.
He beat Raja Harshad in the game.
Because I gave him 1 minute, because Raja was...
Not Wesley. Oh, I was like...
Vasif.
I thought you said Wesley.
No, Wesley.
We were watching...
No.
No
I wasn't there today, right? Most of the games,
I remember FIDE, World Championship for Rapid Chess. And it was between Garry Kasparov and Evgeny Baryev. was played in France, and it was a big playing hall, and the hall was packed. And there they were on the stage, and you know, it was kind of one of these 30-minute games with no increment. And it was bang, 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 bang. And the whole screen froze. Like, no moves were played, bang, 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 bang. Shaking of hands, signing of score sheet. An exultant Kasparov walks off stage. And everybody's like, what happened? Well, what happened? It was a DGT-enabled board. But Kasparov was white. He had a pawn on f3 and a white king on g3. And black had a rook on a3. And Kasparov played f4, which was illegal. And the DGT board didn't process it, right? It was just stuck there. It didn't allow the move f4.
Didn't show the move.
And they went bang, 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 bang. And they signed the score sheets and everything like this. And that was... It was an illegal move. Yeah. Gary won the game and he won the world championship. Yeah.
So what is actually the rule? If someone makes an illegal move and their opponent doesn't notice it, let's say you play f4, like in this example, and the rook's on a3 and they play rook to a8. Does the game continue after rook to a8?
Yeah, it continues. Like, if you're still in check, you have to resolve the check, but otherwise,
But can the black player say, sorry, I made an illegal... It was an illegal position. Let's go back to that position. Can the black player do that?
That's an interesting question. Let me think.
Because I heard something, and I don't know if it's according to the rule book. I heard there's like a 5-move rule.
Well, under certain normal time control, but under rapid or blitz, that's not a fire. That's not a rule.
So my understanding is we start the game. You and I are experienced grandmasters, but the king and queen are the wrong swimmers. And we play, as you said, 5 moves, and I think it is 5 moves. And I go, oh, geez, I'm sorry, the king and queen are the wrong squares. And you go, no, let's keep them that way.
So that would stand.
So, and it's 10 moves and the classical time control. Yeah. 10 moves,
Ten moves. So if somehow we managed to play without noticing that
our piece... The king and queen were in the wrong squares.
Then after 10 moves, it stays.
Can the players agree to change it back, or does it stay?
After 10 moves, you cannot. Before 10 moves, you can.
But what happens to castling?
Well, you got to castle.
you can still castle with the same rules, right? You're just back. The other side, right?
So. You can castle queenside by playing king b1, rook c1?
It's weird, right? I think your king is on
Fischer,
d1.
Fischer random, like king.
Hey, but think of it this way: if your
like
king
Fischer
is on
random,
d1,
you can castle, right?
But it wouldn't be like kingside. It would be like king c1, rook d1, not king b1, rook c1.
So you have a white king on d1, and you want to castle queenside. Yeah. So I think it would go to b1, and the rook would
b1,
go to c1.
B1. Yeah. But then how cool it's always two squares. The king,
but Fischer random is king c1, rook d1.
Yes.
So it wouldn't be
but this
to
is
the rule.
But this is a classical game.
This is our Fischer random.
where we misplaced with king and queen.
Yeah, interesting. I'll look that up.
It's hard to imagine that ever happening.
Right.
Like,
but think of how cool castling kingside would be in the Ruy Lopez, where the king and queen are misplaced, right? You get your rook on e1 in one turn.
Yeah.
Judith, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank
I'm not going to hold you for longer because there's
a
party going on.
Of course, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow.
I'm going to try to get Levon also.
Of course. Well, he'd probably have stories of illegal moves. T.
I'm invited?
Yes.
Hello, you're invited. Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, this makes you by far our most
welcome guest.
We've had you on so many times.
I haven't been canceled yet.
We're working on it. We're hoping you'll say something very special.
All right, let's talk about the big match between you two guys, because I really enjoyed that. Everybody enjoyed that. I mean,
it was the greatest match I've ever called.
Except us.
You guys
were suffering.
I didn't enjoy it.
You guys were suffering.
You enjoyed it at the end, but I mean, everybody was suffering in between. It was back and forth.
Wow.
And, I mean, we really enjoyed that. Let's talk about that. Who wants to? Whatever. Why don't you start, Fabi?
No, I mean, I got a lot of good emotions during this match because whenever you make a comeback at some point, you get some ecstasy, like after this long game that I won.
Yeah, sure.
Basically but at the end, of course, there was such heartbreak. Not because, I understand our matches can go any way, but that it was so close And I...
Oh, yeah, that game that, I mean, by some miracle, I won in Pirates.
Yeah.
Yes. That was... I would be heartbroken.
I was so heartbroken after
No, because he had like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I had 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was not controlling anything.
No.
I was tilting.
No, you were just responding to every threat he was making. You were surviving.
And then, you know, his queen got to F7. I'm like, oh my God. Am I getting made?
Yeah.
No,
miracle.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
No, I mean, for us as commentators, it was extraordinary.
Yeah.
No, I
yeah.
mean... The drama, the excitement, the thrill, what the heck is going on. And every game is decisive and it's going back and forth. But I can imagine for yourselves, it's like, oh, this is torture, you know,
yeah.
like I'm so close to victory. Oh, no. So, I mean, how did you recover? How do you
deal there were with some these interesting emotions? There were some interesting opening discussions also. You were playing this Ruy Lopez with black with d6, g6, and then f5. The first game was pretty suspicious. I mean, you got a losing position.
Well, first we started I played b5, bishop c5,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And for sure I got a very good opening.
Oh.
Position after the opening h5, I'm very doing very well. And for some reason, I quickly play this terrible move f5, and after that, my position is busted.
Okay.
Like, very, very bad position.
Yeah. I made some mistake, I mean, in process,
yeah.
of course.
At
but it was, you know, one type of a chance, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It was a bad... I mean, I think I had, like, 5% chance to survive after f5, yeah? It was, like, very... Just one moment, yeah? Even though it was good, I just wanted to switch, because I thought it's easier to play d6. g6, you know, you just place your pieces. You don't have to think about anything on the king side. Like,
mm-hmm.
not so responsible. And I remembered, because I checked the file in between the games, I remembered bishop e3, black plays knight e7, and I even remembered it showed 0 equals, and under it, a plus. And I thought I remembered this. And then afterwards, I see that I completely imagined everything. There was no note that said 97 black and black. This is just in my imagination.
Invention.
But I was so sure of it that I played it twice.
I made the same mistake twice.
Yeah. Even after losing the first time, I was still convinced. I must have been better.
I like it.
But this is not the only time that it happened in this tournament. You took on c6. Hikaru also played this suspicious Kalashnikov with Wesley twice.
Right.
And he got like losing positions both times.
You
but
mean
it was like
Rosolimo, no? Or not Kalashnikov?
Was it Rosolimo?
Rosolimo.
Rosolimo, yeah. The structures became
almost
like...
Oh, the
c5.
Like
this is
a terrible move.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he was playing it so confidently.
Right.
Magnus's. It's Magnus's move.
Yeah. And then he finishes in like plus one, yeah? But still. You make some moves, 3+2, anything can happen with imbalanced positions, yeah.
I love the format, you guys.
Oh, the format.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Would you use this format for a U.S. championship, for other prestigious events?
Well, to me, like, I don't understand one thing, because to
Please.
Me, this is a U.S. championship. Like, it has
the
best the
players
in
Cup.
The U.S. in
yeah,
match,
actually,
in
it's
format.
Even stronger.
So, if you... I understand you call it the American Cup, American Championship, but you shouldn't have the same format twice. It makes no sense.
That's true.
Twice in a year, you have exact same format, and you call it different things. I mean, one should be one format, one should be another format. You can call it whatever you want.
And also, I like this distinction. When you have a championship, it's classical, but the World Cup, there's also lots of rapid.
Right.
So, Cup
word. American Cup, the word Cup can be coupled with different time controls.
Yeah.
As opposed to championship.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like championship is more
that
serious.
That was an accident,
more
by the way. I mean, I don't know if the event organizers take that into account. But wait a minute. We have Sinkfield Cup, right?
We do have Sinkfield Cup, yeah.
Wait a
yeah.
minute. But the Sinkfield Cup has tie breaks, or you used
but
to
so
have
does
tie
the
breaks.
American Championship.
Yes.
We have... Very often ends in
okay,
playoff.
Okay, invalid point on my part.
You got caught.
Okay,
got
finally, caught. He's off the air. That's it. No more invitations. We were wondering, how do we get rid of love?
I like the format, but some variety is not bad. Some classical chess. I mean, not everything has to be rapid and blitz. Yeah,
true.
No, of course not.
Of course not.
Like, now,
I'm just saying as a commentator,
yeah.
I
guess a better question would be, what about the classical portion of it? Can this specific classical with no second time control? replace the usual classical with two or three time controls?
I generally think you need some sort of like 15 seconds, 10 minutes or 15 minutes.
After the 40 minutes.
Yeah, come on. I mean.
Bathroom break.
Yeah.
Mm.
Just some.
So you almost don't consider this classical?
It doesn't feel very classical to me.
I actually think it has the opposite effect, because when you shorten the time control to like blitz or rapid, then you have a lot of decisive results. But if you shorten it but keep it classical, then you have a tremendous amount of draws. It's usually the case because people play very safe. Mm-hmm. You can still play very safe when this is kind of 90 minutes.
Yeah.
But you don't want to get into time trouble, so you don't take kind of extreme risks that you might.
Interesting. Because there was a lot of decisive games in the tournament, but not a lot of decisive classical games, especially in the
I think actually just in this format, just to eliminate this classical portion. Make it rapid matches. And make it like shortening rapid matches.
Mm-hmm. It can be, so basically elimination bracket pretty much all the way through.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Mm. Intriguing.
I don't understand this classical portion. We had 95% draws. What was the...
Well, have classical chess, but have this at least this 15 minutes or, you know,
or
so
that
people can just relax at some point.
Right? Yes, yes. Guys, I mean, I'm not even on the podcast, but I got to ask you a question, because you're talking about classical chess, and I absolutely hate... the time control for the World Chess Championship match, as I hate the time control for the World Championship Candidates Tournament. There's no other tournaments in the world or matches that use this three time controls of 40 and 2, 20 and 1, 30 plus 30. Up till that time, you're not using the increments, and there's no other tournaments in the world, and now the World Championship match is being decided by a time control that nobody plays.
Mm.
What's your thoughts?
I mean,
come on, guys.
You've played that time control, so
well,
in that particular
we've all
setting.
We've all played it, I guess. But
with
yeah,
those stakes
I don't understand one thing. Like, why does FIDE, they have some uniform classical, uniform rapid? Instead, we're playing, everything is different, yeah? Sometimes we play 90 and 30 in FIDE events. Sometimes we play these, like, three time controls, like you mentioned.
Right.
At least have some sort of uniform... For classical, uniform for rapid, uniform
for
blitz.
Blitz.
I mean, it's normal, right?
Right. So the reason I complained so vociferously just now is because of the tournament he won in Dusseldorf. I had, and I'm not joking, I think I had an 8-hour broadcast single day.
8 or 9 hours.
I was like, brutal.
I was enjoying watching.
Oh, yeah, right. Watching. Thank you, Levon. What a friend's for.
He was coming to dinner with so much hunger in his eyes. It was a joy.
Look, I was on all fours, you know, coming into the dinner room, please. And I'm waiting for the guy to say, I'm sorry. We closed the kitchen 3 minutes ago.
Speaking of the World Championship match, I want to finish it on this note, since we probably won't see you before the World Championship match starts. Predictions. Let's go. Let's start with you.
I think Jan will win. I have a feeling.
Jan will win. Why?
Well, he already played the World Championship match.
Experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
That helps.
And I think there is way too much pressure on Ding.
You think so?
Mm. Yeah. Somehow, I have this feeling for this tournament, you know, is the first chance for a Chinese player, actually, you know, in history, ever to come close.
There's a very heavy narrative,
yeah
on his shoulders, yeah.
Yeah, you know, all the party is going to be there. I guess he has, they were saying something like 30 helpers.
Yeah,
sounds like a lot.
A lot of people is never good.
Yeah. But that's interesting, yeah, because we weren't sure whether he's going to have any team at all. He hasn't been traveling with a huge team. We've seen him recently at Tata Steel. He didn't have anybody with him.
But I'm not sure, like, this whole team. I don't buy this whole team thing.
You don't think so?
Yeah, I mean, I saw his interview. He said that he was, like,
we've seen some pictures, right?
Working remotely with people. So, okay, I mean, this photo with, like, 30 people. Like, he's not working with 30 people.
I thought that was a goodbye photo. Like, it was, like, a reception. Good luck and have a nice time in Astana. I'm going to go with Napa for different reasons. I don't have the, like, psychic insight. But Nepo, for me, has improved his confidence. He's a different person, having gone through Dubai in the World Championship match. And he just
feels like he's playing better chess, yeah. more confident chess, and that's why I'll pick Nepo. But I am expecting a good match.
I think he has this enough nastiness about him.
You need a little. You need a little killer.
You need this kind of annoying nastiness, you know.
Right.
It's very useful for a world championship match.
I felt it from Ding also a little bit.
I never felt it.
Really?
I mean, I felt it in his moves, but not his.
In his moves, not in his demeanor.
Not in his demeanor.
Yeah. Yeah. In his moves, very often I.
But
when
quite
he's
often,
in good shape,
quite
he's
often
in good shape.
It's important to have in your demeanor. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Guys, thank you very much. Let's party.
And good luck with the podcast. You guys got to get to 100,000. Come on, people. Help them. Subscribe.
Let's go. All right. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Good work.
Anybody else?
No, we're done.
No?
We're done. It's fun. We're good.